Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy. And good neighbor and friend Mike Metz is here and keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. Mike, what's new on the prairie?
Well, with the goldenrods, sunflowers, and some of the other yellow blooms, it's shining out there, even though it's gray and rainy this morning.
Shining yellow. Yes, indeed. Well, this morning's rainfall will be letting up. A high of 75 is forecast today with possible rain showers this evening. It looks like plenty of sun over the weekend, with highs next week in the upper 70s, lower 80s. It should be a nice late summer run of good weather, and man, oh man, do I like the rain. So now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that 116 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County the week before. That brought the total number of virus cases in the county to 11,355 since the pandemic started. There was also word that Story County Public Health planned to offer the coronavirus vaccine at last Saturday's farmers market in Ames. Another clinic was set to be held at the Nevada Public Library. The Trib also reported that the Ames History Museum was set to celebrate its 40th anniversary. The museum was founded to save the Hoggett School, which was the first school building in the area back in the 1860s. The schoolhouse was threatened with demolition, and a group of residents formed the Ames Heritage Association, which later became the Ames Historical Society, to save it. That schoolhouse building is now on the campus of the Meeker Elementary School in Ames. And the Trib had word about Huxley's Prairie Fest, which took place last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Included were such things as a petting zoo at Memorial Park, a musical act, a pancake breakfast, a parade, a rock climbing wall, a car show, and much more. Saturday's Trib had word that the current coronavirus surge shows no signs of letting up in Iowa. More than 1,000 new cases of the virus turned up each day last week. More than half those cases were among people younger than 40, and 17% were younger than 17 years old. Those age groups also have the lowest vaccination rates. And the number of people hospitalized with the virus also went up last week to more than 500 people by the middle of this week. That's compared to fewer than 50 people hospitalized with the virus 2 months ago. And 79% of those hospitalized in Iowa with the coronavirus have not been vaccinated. The Trib also reported that the Boone County Hospital was continuing to limit visitors and require the wearing of masks. Hospital CEO Joe Smith said, in his words, "It's pretty obvious the Delta variant is spreading." He also said the hospital is considering mandating the coronavirus vaccine for employees. He said hospitals fear losing good employees if such mandates are made, and then those workers quit. And the Trib had word that the West Nile virus has been detected in Ames, and that the city plans to fog local parks to control mosquito populations. Recent testing shows mosquitoes trapped in city parks carried the virus, and that the mosquitoes that could potentially carry it are still likely in the area. An Iowa State University entomology professor said this is near the peak season of West Nile transmission, and advised residents to remove standing water from flower pots, buckets, or barrels, and wear mosquito repellent or long-sleeved shirts and long pants outdoors, especially at dawn and dusk when West Nile transmitting mosquitoes are most active. Most people infected by West Nile show no symptoms, but a small number of people develop serious illnesses. There were only 3 cases of West Nile reported in Iowa last year, none of them fatal. Sunday's paper reported that about 50 people had turned out at Ada Hayden Park in Ames on Saturday to commemorate International Overdose Awareness Day. It was organized by Natasha Taronas, whose daughter died from an opioid overdose 5 years ago. Attendees learned how to administer naloxone, an opioid overdose medication, and they heard from mothers whose children died from drug overdoses. Such overdoses killed 93,000 people last year in the United States, a record high number that was 30% more than the death toll from overdoses a year earlier. Ames police now carry naloxone in their vehicles. The Trib also reported on the death of Pat Miller. She had been the director of the Iowa State University Lectures Program for nearly 40 years, until she retired in 2018. She was considered the heart and soul of that program, who brought in notable speakers such as Mitt Romney, Angela Davis, Cesar Chavez, Margaret Atwood, and even Bill Nye, the science guy. She also was a mentor and friend to thousands of students. Pat Miller died at the age of 72. And there was word that about 60% of Iowa was still experiencing moderate to extreme drought, in spite of thunderstorms that have recently rolled through parts of the state. The rain helped replenish Iowa's soils, rivers, lakes, and streams, but the moisture deficits are big in some parts of the state. In northern Iowa, rainfall has been 8 to 12 inches below average. Now, most farmers are getting set to harvest the state's more than 22 million acres of corn and soybeans. Iowa's crops are about a week ahead of normal maturity time. Tuesday's Trib reported on the sentencing of the man convicted of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts in 2018. A judge sentenced Christian Bahena Rivera to life in prison without the possibility of parole, 2 months after Bahena Rivera was convicted of first-degree murder in Tibbetts' death. At his trial, Bahena Rivera claimed two masked men had forced him at gunpoint to drive them to a rural road where Tibbetts was abducted. He said he did not tell police about this because the men had threatened his former girlfriend and young daughter. The judge rejected Bahena Rivera's lawyer's request for a new trial. There was also word that people have been visiting Iowa farm supply stores to buy a deworming drug for horses and other livestock that some conservative political leaders and commentators tout as an alternative to the coronavirus vaccine, though experts say it can be dangerous to humans. Cases of poisoning involving the drug have been reported in the state. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued a warning against using the drug, ivermectin, to treat the coronavirus. And there was word that the Story City Municipal Electric Utility Administrator would retire on Tuesday after 24 years with the utility. Jeff Ishmael has seen plenty of changes and responded to numerous emergencies during his time in Story City. Mayor Mike Jensen said Ishmael has been through a lot of things with the plant, including last year's derecho and many winter storms and summer thunderstorms, and that when the lights have gone out in the city, it hasn't been for very long. Before he went to work at the plant in 1997, Ishmael worked for the City of Ames as the Energy Efficiency Coordinator. He says he has no plans for his retirement except to enjoy life. His position as Story City's Municipal Electric Utility Administrator will be taken by Jake Froelich, who has worked at the plant for 9 years. Wednesday's Trib reported that former Republican presidential candidate and current Florida U.S. Senator Marco Rubio had come to Ames, saying he's focused on helping the friends he made in Iowa while gearing up for his own re-election bid. Rubio spoke at a gathering with the Story County Republican Party. He criticized President Biden, saying the president cared more about the optics of ending the war in Afghanistan on a particular timeline than doing the job effectively. He said the United States is engaged in a debate about whether America is truly a great country with a history to be proud of, or whether what is known about America should be torn down completely and rebuilt to something no one would recognize. Wednesday's paper also reported that the company that wants to build a $4.5 billion pipeline in Iowa as part of a system to permanently sequester carbon from biofuels will hold a series of meetings over the next 2 months so landowners can hear more about the plan. Summit Carbon Solutions wants to build a 710-mile underground pipeline that would extend into or through 30 of Iowa's 99 counties. Summit plans to capture the carbon dioxide emissions from ethanol and other industrial agricultural plants before they're released into the atmosphere and can contribute to global warming. In addition to Iowa, the pipeline would run into Nebraska, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. In Story County, a meeting on this will take place at 6 o'clock on September 13th at the Gateway Hotel and Conference Center in Ames. And the Trib reported that an Iowa State University climate scientist helped author a chapter in the newest report from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. William Gutowski's chapter dealt with the regional effects of climate change. It says that it's likely the Midwest will continue to see more extreme precipitation events that could lead to floods, and that there's high confidence that there could be more droughts as well. Yesterday's paper reported that Iowa had spent more than $2 million so far to fund the statewide at-home coronavirus testing program that launched in mid-July. Most of that has paid for a new contract with one of several Utah-based companies involved in the previous version of the Test Iowa program, which did not follow the traditional competitive bidding process. The Trib also reported that Ames is 1 year away from the expected completion date of its Climate Action Plan. That's a plan that sets a target for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and lays out actions to help achieve that goal. A Canadian company, Sustainability Solutions Group, was contracted to create the action plan and made a presentation at Tuesday's Ames City Council meeting. A supplemental input committee representing 12 community sectors will help direct the plan. And the Trib reported on a new program to bring live music into Ames neighborhoods. It's called Music on the Move, and it's a collaborative effort between the Ames Community Arts Council and Stevens Auditorium. The idea is to drive through a neighborhood playing music, then stop at a parking lot or someone's driveway and have a concert. The first such event took place a week ago in the Green Hills neighborhood. The traveling music event will go on to new areas around town every 2 weeks or so through the end of October. And today's paper has word that the number of coronavirus cases in Storey County has shot up in the past week, reaching a level that has not been seen in quite some time. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to take the weekend off now, but also planning to return to this same virtual seat on Local Talk on Monday, Labor Day, when I'll have word on what's been making news around Iowa. In the meantime, I hope we both have a great holiday weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News and the music interlude, Rain, by the Beatles. Mike Metz, what a lovely rain this morning.
Yes, it's adding to the driest wet spell we've had in a while. We're still under a drought situation. We're way behind, but this sure helps.
Yeah, it sure will. Wolf Osterich is a local birder who provides a wealth of bird sightings from Ada Hayden Heritage Park. From time to time, it is wonderful to have Wolf on KHOI, particularly during migration. Hi, Wolf.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, hey, great to hear your voice. And as one of the best friends of Ada Hayden Park there is, how is your day at Ada Hayden in the rain?
Well, I just got out here waiting for the rain to stop, but Just three of us just cleared the trail from a tree that the beaver knocked down. Fortunately, the guy had let me know, so I brought a saw with me so I could cut it down. And I'm just passing a green heron perched in a downed tree in the lake.
Oh, a green heron. So how is that different from the great blue herons?
Well, it's much, much smaller. Although sometimes when it stretches its neck out, it can get about half the size of a great blue heron. And it's got stripes on the belly, green back. One time they called them green back herons, and then they moved it back to green heron.
Oh, sure. And quite often you do see them on dislodged trees or in brushy or places with a lot of perches close to the water, parallel
right,
to the water.
They like to sit there on the branch and watch them down below, and then they'll dive down and get something.
Now, is that a nesting species out there at Ada Hayden?
It has in the past, but I've not seen any nests in the last few years.
Oh, interesting. Well, what is it that you are seeing that kind of brings a smile to Wolf Osterich's face these days?
Well, the warblers are moving through southward, so we're getting quite a few different species.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen any yet today, but yesterday I had a Nashville in the morning, but the day before that I had like six or seven different species.
So they're coming
through.
Yeah, so the warblers are a real feature of the autumn migration, it sounds like. But these warblers, smaller than a goldfinch?
They can be.
Yeah.
And there's maybe a couple of species that are a little bit bigger than that.
Now, what are the ones that would bring you the most noteworthy sighting to share with your Ada Hayden friends?
Of the warblers or
yeah.
anything up here? Well, the black and white are pretty nice to see. They kind of act like nuthatches. They will go up and down the tree trunk, so it's really nice to see. And then I had several golden-winged warblers, which used to be kind of rare here at the park, but they've become kind of common in migration.
Oh,
and they have a gold patch on the wings and then some gold in the head, and they're just very colorful.
Yeah, Wolf, Mike Metz here. I was going to ask you about the gold-winged warblers. I know in the northern states they're trying to improve the habitat for those little guys. Do you suppose that has something to do with you're seeing more of them?
I could be. Yeah, if you have the habitat and they can breed, then we'll get more and more of them. So, yeah. In the last week and a half, I've probably seen a dozen of them, and that's more than I usually see.
Yeah, and then the other question I had is, you talk about the group of warblers. We usually have one that hangs out, one of the last to go, but one of the first to show up, and that's the yellow rump. Have you seen any of those yet?
No, I have not, but I know my friend Paul DeMoto, he had one 2 days ago over at the bluff.
So the yellow rump warblers are kind of a feature of the early migration that people should be watching for?
Early northward and then late coming southward.
Okay. Oh, later. Okay. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we'll get them in wintertime on a Christmas count. There's a few of them, stragglers that haven't quite left the area.
Are there certain spots that you go to look to see these warblers?
One of the best spots is what the area I call the Bluff. It overlooks the South Lake on the north side. And you go up there, and there's all big trees and open-up area, especially since the derecho. And you can see the warblers kind of feeding around in there.
Around the bluff, okay. Have you seen any of the American red starts?
Yes, they can breed here. Although I think this year, since it was so dry, I didn't see any during the summer. Mm. Usually we get, at least a pair up in the bluff area especially, that seem to hang around, and I suspect that they were breeding.
So there are a few dozen warblers. Do you recall your list, or how comprehensive is your warbler list for the Ada Hayden?
It's probably two-thirds of what you can be seen in Iowa at any time, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had you on during the Earth Day Appreciation last April in the spring. Do you recall that report?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I said, but I mean
there was, but you had a bald eagle sighting Man, it just caused our hearts to soar with the eagle when you said, "Oh my gosh!" And there's a bald eagle flying over.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. Well, how many years have you enjoyed eagles here in Iowa, Wolf?
Well, probably since I arrived in July of '89.
Okay.
You know, we get them. We see them year round. Although, you know, in winter we see a lot more than we do in the summertime.
Were you able to visit Ada Hayden in 1989 when you first arrived?
Yeah. Oh, no, because it wasn't a park.
Right.
But, with a Big Blue Stem, we would drive down 69 and see Hallett Quarry, and so we would see things on the lake at that time.
So it was already...
private properties, we didn't get to go into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. A local birding hotspot, if you will, has now become a destination for more than just birding,
right,
with canoeing and kayaking, all the water sports, but that walking trail. I particularly like to watch for people on the trail carrying their binoculars with them.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Wolf,
it's probably the best thing that's happened to the city is this park.
The best thing that's happened to this city is Ada Hayden Park. That's quite a statement. You know, we're going to have Keith Abraham on a little bit later in the program today. I'll probably pass that one forward. I think he kind of knows it, too. Yeah.
Wolf, are you seeing any early waterfall starting to come through?
Well, a couple weeks ago, the first blue-winged teal showed up. And then I've had green-winged teal, but other than that, they're kind of still behind. Mm-hmm. And then that greater white-fronted goose that arrived in early spring stayed all summer long. And you know, the one I thought was injured,
it can
fly, but it doesn't have sustained flight. So it does move around between the wetland pools and sometimes the South Lake.
So, Wolf, on a morning like this, would you encourage people to go out to Ada Hayden and to enjoy what you're seeing?
Of course. Any day. Cold, hot, whatever.
So the weekend is upon us, and I know there'll be a lot of activity around Ames with a football game coming to town. But what would be the one thing you would like to share with our listeners that might consider going out to Ada Hayden Saturday or Sunday?
I would say come out anytime, especially in the morning when it's going to be a little cooler, and just walk around the trail. Don't put those earplugs in. Leave them off so you can hear the birds singing around you. Just, you know, enjoy the nature.
Okay. Wolf, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, a bird that we don't get here too often is a semi-pollinated plover.
Yes.
We've had an immature here the last 2 days, so that's been kind of nice. It's in that southwest corner of the South Lake on the sandbars. And we have the sandbars because the water level has dropped drastically. So that provides some shorebird habitat.
So the shorebirds, they're the ones that kind of like the mud flats or areas that were inundated with crustaceans, different arthropods. And then the water level has diminished, and now you've got a mud flat. So that's where you see the semi-palmated plover. Shorebirds, I guess, is another term for what people are describing. And
in place of the plover today, there's a spotted sandpiper that's already lost its spot, so it's kind of gotten it into its winter plumage.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. Well, Wolf, I hope to have you back again as the migration evolves. It's definitely upon us now, and we sure appreciate you checking in and sharing what you're seeing there at Ada Hayden.
Well, thanks you for calling me.
Okay. Keep in touch.
Have a good day.
Have a good day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phenology is documenting nature's happenings when they occur. The first bluebird of spring or the last meadowlark of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology are migrating nighthawks. During these dog days of summer, some birds have already initiated migration. Reports of 50 to 100 nighthawks are being reported at Mason City and Davenport. Nighthawks are medium-sized, slender birds with very long, pointed wings. They measure 9 to 10 inches long, display a wingspan of 20 to 24 inches. They weigh 2 to 4 ounces and have a lifespan of 4 to 5 years. Common nighthawks are well camouflaged in gray, white, buff, and black. Their long, dark wings have a striking white blaze. Their buzzy pink call is distinctive. It often takes advantage of clouds of insects attracted to street lamps, stadium lights, and other bright lights at dawn and dusk. Only the small tip of the bill is usually visible, and this combined with the large eyes and short neck gives the bird a big-headed look. It's sometimes called a bull bat due to its perceived bat-like flight and the bull-like head and neck. Like the eastern whippoorwill, it's a member of the Caprimulgidae family, a group also known as nightjars. Another name is goatsucker. The Latin for goatsucker is Caprimulgus, hence the family name. Goatsucker is from an archaic, erroneous idea that the birds would fly into barns at night and with their large mouth opening, suck dry the udders of goats. The name nighthawk itself is a bit of a misnomer, since the bird does not hunt at night, nor closely related to hawks. I know that during the peregrine falcon restoration in Iowa, many early evening reports of long-winged dark birds were received that turned out to be nighthawks. When the description included impressive white bars upon the wings, these reports were deemed nighthawks rather than peregrine falcons. Throughout warm summer evenings, common nighthawks roam the skies over treetops, grasslands, and cities. Their sharp electric pink call is often the first clue they're overhead. In the dim half-light, these long-winged birds fly in graceful loops, flashing white patches out past the bend of each wing as they chase insects. These fairly common but declining birds make no nest. Their young are so well camouflaged that they're hard to find, and even the adults seem to vanish as soon as they land. During the day, they roost motionless on a tree branch, fence post, or the ground and are very difficult to see because their feathers look like tree bark. Common nighthawks nest in both rural and urban habitats, including woodland clearings, prairies, open forests, and rock outcrops. They also nest on flat gravel rooftops, though less and less often as gravel roofs are being replaced by the smooth, rubberized roofs that provide an unsuitable surface for nesting. Common nighthawks eat flying insects almost exclusively. They hunt on the wing, opening their tiny beaks to reveal a cavernous mouth well-suited for snapping up flying insects like an enlarged vacuum cleaner. Nighthawks eat any insects like queen ants, wasps, mosquitoes, beetles, caddisflies, moths, bugs, mayflies, grasshoppers, and other flying insects. They may also eat a small amount of vegetation. They occasionally forage during the day in stormy weather, but seem to never forage at night. Common nighthawks are usually solitary, but they form large flocks during migration. They have one of the longest migration routes of all North American birds. They may travel 1,600 to 4,200 miles where they winter in southern South America, including Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina. They migrate by day or night in loose flocks, frequently numbering in the thousands. No visible leader is observed. The enormous distance traveled between breeding grounds and wintering range is epic in duration. The northbound journey commences at the end of February, and the birds reach destinations as late as mid-June. The southward migration commences mid-July and reaches a close in early October. Threats to these interesting birds include pesticide use and habitat loss. Common nighthawks are also vulnerable to collisions with cars, since they forage over roads or roost on roadways at night. Their population is seriously declining in many parts of North America. Causes may include changes in land use and overuse of pesticides. In some areas, nighthawks nesting on gravel roofs have been targeted by increasing urban populations of crows, which eat the eggs. Populations have plunged with a cumulative decline of 61% between 1966 and 2014, according to the North American Breeding Bird Survey. The 2014 State of the Birds report lists common nighthawks as a common bird in steep decline.
In early 2016, American Bird Conservancy joined with beekeepers, farmers, and other public interested groups in filing a lawsuit alleging insufficient federal regulation of neonicotinoids, an insecticide widely used as a seed coating. A 2013 study by the American Bird Conservancy found that these neonics are toxic to birds and invertebrates, even in small quantities, and that they persist in soils for months and even years. Nighthawk numbers are declining, yet their congregated numbers during the migration this time of year provide uplifting inspiration to carry on the crusade to keep these birds with us into the 21st century. And that's our phenology for today. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, the heart of Iowa, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
Without a little bar.
This is KHOI Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. Today with our engineer Mike Murphy and my neighbor Mike Metz, let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hey, great to be here.
Great to have you with us once again. Before we introduce your guest, do you have any announcements for the city?
Well, just a reminder that it is a three-day weekend. It is Labor Day weekend, and we will be off. Most city departments and divisions will not be open on Monday, but we'll be back to greet you again on Tuesday. And also, as we get into September, so many things are going on. As my guest today, Keith Abraham, will talk about, we're going to close some facilities, but for other departments, that just means the start of some more seasonal activities. And I'm just going to leave it at that and kind of sprinkle those in into September. We have got a lot of people scheduled. I'm working very far into the month of September with some great guests coming up because we have so much stuff happening.
Great to know, great to hear, and great to have Keith Abraham with us. Hey, great to have you with us, Keith. So it's another successful summer season, I guess. You're in transition.
Yes. Yes, we had some good things happen this summer throughout programs. You know, our camp program, we averaged almost 20 more kids per week for our camps this summer, which was a great thing to see people being more comfortable to come out and get outside. We had a lot of good participation in our outdoor classes for fitness. That kind of came about in 2020 due to the pandemic. So right. We have continued with that, and people are really excited. And probably the biggest excitement for people this year was that we did open Furman, the Furman Aquatic Center, which was closed all of 2020, again, due to the pandemic. But it's been a good season. People have been very happy with being able to get back into the pool. Started out a little rocky, experiencing some leaks and losing 10,000 gallons of water a day. But we did isolate those, corrected a couple of them, and we just have a major leak that we'll be taking care of at the end of the season. But we are getting into the last weekend of Furman, so Susan referenced the facilities closing up, so this will be our last weekend. And one of the things that I just will mention, it has always been our goal in the City of Ames to have the Furman Aquatic Center open from Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day. And if you've been looking at the news over the last several weeks, there are a lot of pools, communities that have closed their pools 2 or even 3 weeks ago because they are having staffing issues and so on. But we have always tried to stay open, and we have been experiencing some staffing issues, but we've been able to stay open. We have had to close slides at times, occasionally have to close one of the basins. But going into this weekend, we are open 11 to 1 today and then 5 to 7. But Saturday, Sunday, what we'll be doing is we'll be open from 11 to 1 for water walking and lap swimming. We won't have tot time on either of those days. And then on Monday, we won't have anything from 11 to 1. But on each of those days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, we will have open swim from 1 to 5 rather than 1 to 8. So weekend hours for this this weekend. Our change a little bit, again, due to the staffing. But we really appreciate everything that Joe Burt, our aquatics manager, has done, and all of our lifeguards and shift leaders and concession staff and cashiers and everything that that they have done to keep the facility open as much as we can.
Yeah, well, it's been quite a year of recovery. How important is your aquatic center to your overall programs or to the city, Keith?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, and it is very important. It's one of those amenities that is only open roughly 100 days a year. And when it is open, people really appreciate it. Not every community has an outdoor pool, much less an outdoor aquatic center with the things that we offer. And we're always promoting people to get outside and be physically active. And obviously, the aquatic center does that. It adds to the quality of life for the community. It's a good draw for people when they're looking at resettling or moving to Ames to have an amenity like that. But it's one of those things that for most of the kids, they're getting a lot of exercise, they're getting a lot of outdoor movement and so on, and they don't even realize it because it's a fun activity. They're with their friends. It's good for socialization. We hear stories about, parents bringing their children to Todd Time, or they go to water walking, and now they've had, developed friendships that they've had for multiple years because of that connection at the pool. So there's a lot of positives, and it is very important to what we do.
Well, you mentioned a term there, quality of life, that you're enhancing for all us Stories County residents. And when people come and visit Ames, I can only imagine how grateful they become when they can go with their family and friends to an aquatic center. And we just had Wolf Osterich out talking about Ada Hayden, and I guess it's a quality of life theme. You, like you say, take it outside, enjoy the outdoors. But I've been hearing about the indoor potential pool. Have you got any updates on that?
Yeah, I'll just share a little bit. And obviously, all of our facilities, enhance the quality of life. And everybody looks at recreation differently. It may be, being outdoors. It might be taking a walk at Ada Hayden. It might be reading a book at Brookside Park. It might be taking the kids or grandkids to the Miracle Park in Ines Grove. But there are people that love basketball, that love swimming year-round. And unfortunately, Furman would be a good skating rink in the wintertime, not good for swimming. But we are looking at the Indoor Aquatic Center, which again would go north of Lincoln Way, is what's being proposed on DOT property right now. And we have been having conversation with the DOT. They are interested in selling that property to the city of Ames. They do have a process, for disposing of property. And one of the things that they have to do is get an appraisal. They did a preliminary appraisal back in January to just give us some idea of what that property has cost. Because with the reinvestment district program that we applied for an application, and we did need to know that number. So they're doing a final appraisal. That hopefully will be back in September, sometime this month, and we'll have a better feel for what that property may cost the city. They do need to sell it at fair market value. That's part of their policy. So that's the first thing that we've been having conversation with. And obviously right now there's two buildings on that site. So we'll have to look at potentially can people working in those locations be relocated to maybe another location, or can we do construction on the site and coexist with the DOT buildings and make that work? So that's one of the components. At the August 24th council meeting, council did set a date for a hearing, and that hearing date is for September 14th. And at that time, what the hearing does, what council will be approving or voting on, will be the authority to issue bonds without going to a vote. And that's because at that August 24th meeting, they did adopt an urban renewal area, which coincides with the reinvestment district program, those boundaries. But in the with an urban renewal, and they also did adopt an urban renewal plan, with that, you know, they can issue bonds in an urban renewal area to promote economic development or to take care of blight situations if there are any. So what the total project cost is estimated at $31.2 million, and what the city council is discussing or going to be voting on September 14th is the for 21 issuing bonds up to $24.2 million. Again, right now we have $10 million pledged in fundraising. And then if we get the $10 million through the reinvestment district program, that's what we're looking at. So those are just a few things that are happening with the Indoor Aquatic Center. And as a reminder, Municipal Pool gets get closed in, February 28th will be the last day that it will be open of 2022.
And September 14th, just to reiterate, what sounds to be a very significant, is that a typical Tuesday night city council meeting?
Yes, it is. Oh. It is a regular council meeting.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it'll be that will be happening on that night.
And we'll have probably a reminder from Susan September 10th, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I would say is, obviously, the building itself, we're looking at three basins. One six-lane, 25-yard lap pool. There'll be a zero-depth entry pool with a current channel, so people will continue water walking throughout the year. We will have a therapy pool, so be a number of things. We can have aqua classes. We can have some of our younger swimming lessons there. There can be therapy that can be done in that that pool. We'll have some slides. We'll have a party room, you know, for birthday parties and so on. And then we'll have, you know, some multi-purpose space and really looking at the walking track. So those are some of the amenities that will go into this facility.
Oh, that's good to hear. Good to know. Is there anything else, Susan or Keith?
Susan, you got anything
else?
No,
I just think people should get excited. Yeah, I think this concept is really exciting. Again, Keith mentioned that we won't have an indoor pool after the municipal pool is demolished. And there's just a lot of interest in swimming in the Ames community. I'll have to have Keith come back to talk about frequently asked questions. We get this question a lot about putting the roof over Furman and some other questions about just parks and amenities in Ames. And I think we're going to have to do a whole show just on answering those expert questions on why don't we do things or why do we do things this way. But yeah, a lot of questions are out there, and we're building information and getting that stuff loaded on our website to let people know about this project and many other projects we have coming.
Yeah, so go to the website, City of Ames. It's just great to have these periodic updates. Thank you so much. Keith Abraham is our
for having us.
Ames Parks and Recreation Director, and Susan Guiasta, Ames Public Relations Officer. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, then.
Thanks, Matt. You too.
Okay, thanks so much.
Couldn't live through the hate.
Yes, who indeed will stop the rain? Not me. I love the rain theme today on Local Talk. Let's welcome Stephanie Daniels with ISU Extension, and she's with the Human Services. We're going to learn more about Buy, Eat, Live Healthy. Is that a good branding for your program, Stephanie?
Yes, it is, Pat. Thank you for having me. And hello.
Great to have you with us on Local Talk, Stephanie. And Stephanie Daniels, you're one of the staff with the ISU Extension.
Yes, I am. So Story County Extension and Outreach here in Ames has tons of different programs. We have so much to offer, so much going on, ranging from youth programming. Like you said, I do nutrition education programming. I have Buy, Eat, Live Healthy, and I also have another program called Plan, Shop, Save, Cook. And I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a moment. But
yeah,
ranging also under our umbrella, we have 4-H programs. So we do a lot with farmers, just a ton going on with Iowa State Extension.
Yeah, I think probably the 4-H program, our listeners are, I would hope, would be familiar with that. It's been a kind of a keystone of ISU Extension outreach for decades, literally, maybe over 100 years. But the things on nutrition really kind of strike home. We kind of take nutrition for granted, unfortunately, possibly. Does it seem like that? Here in Story County, we have the good life, thanks to our city council and Parks and Recs and KHOI. We try to enhance people's quality of life, but yet there are food nutrition needs that your program maybe is best to address right here in Story County.
Yes, so I'm very fortunate to work with families with low income in Story County. And I help them learn and explore different nutritious foods that they can cook for their families, especially, you know, exploring cooking meals at home. So feeling comfortable with those cooking skills, we cook together either virtually or in person. And we help them talk about planning those meals. So saving that money, it's going to save time and money when you plan ahead and have that meal plan, look at that grocery list, and kind of look at those flyers. Those are some key things that we talk about in my program. But really, yes, important things that we talk about, definitely things that some people do take for granted, but I'm fortunate enough mm-hmm. to really have this experience to meet with a lot of different participants from a lot of different backgrounds and really have fun teaching them, but also learning from them as well.
Yeah, you got a really sunny personality. Are you from Story County, or if you don't mind my asking, or from Iowa, or have you relocated here?
I am from Iowa. I'm from Jackson County, so eastern Iowa. And so I went to Iowa State University for nutritional science, and I decided that I really enjoyed Ames and I really enjoyed the area, so I stuck around.
And great that we could keep you. It sounds like. Well, one of the programs you also mentioned was Plant, Shop, Cook.
Save and Cook, yes.
And
so
Cook.
Buy, Eat, Live Healthy, yes. Buy, Eat, Live Healthy is a little bit longer series. We are going to go in depth talking about the different food groups, how much is recommended of your different food groups. We specifically talk about something called My Plate, if any listeners are familiar with that. Plan, Shop, Save, Cook is a little bit more condensed, really talking about, like I mentioned, saving that money, planning those meals ahead in order to plan those healthy meals, save that money at the grocery store, and then we touch on handling food safety, cooking that food at home. It's going to be condensed into only 4 lessons, whereas the other is 8. And I just finished a program here at the Story County Extension office with a class of individuals who really learned a lot. They were really grateful for the information that I was providing them. They all said in their survey that we do at our end that they were really paying attention to those food labels more, really using a grocery list, really planning those meals ahead more than they were doing before. So really successful class just graduated there.
Well, and there seems to be a theme of planning. I really like that word. So you're assisting, are they young families? I mean, not to pigeonhole your demographic, but you're encouraging people become smarter shoppers or a little more conscientious? And what are some of those tips or those ways of shopping that you like to promote in your workshops?
Essentially, yes. Just being a smarter shopper. So families are, and individuals, range from young to older individuals. We've got them all. Whether you are now cooking for just yourself, you've got all of your kids gone and you're learning how to just cook for you and your partner, or just your individual, you've had some life changes, or you are cooking for a family. But some different steps that we definitely talk about are building that grocery list. And off that grocery list, you're going to look at your 5-day meal plan. So really looking ahead, because the more trips that you're making to the grocery store, the more money you're going to be spending, the more time you're going to be wasting, and you might come home with, you know, you don't have that plan. So you might come home with all of aisle 10 instead of just what's on your grocery list. So we really talk about that. We have a great resource called Spend Smart, Eat Smart available to all participants and anyone else. You do not have to be a participant. It is a website and a free app, but it has a ton of different recipes available so that participants can really look at those recipes, kind of put them on the list for the week, and then kind of build off of those. They're very low cost, very affordable, pretty easy, beginner friendly, and they're going to be nutritious as well.
It sounds like you've got a lot of programs and a lot of very positive information. We've got just a couple minutes. What would be, first off, if people wanted to come to your offices, what would be that destination? And then some of the websites where we could learn more.
You betcha. First off, if you were interested and wanted to give us a call to learn more, our phone number here at the Story County Extension office is 515-337-1601. And then our website that you can go to for Story County Extension, learn all about the different programs that are going on. You're going to go to extension.iastate.edu/story. And that is going to give you all the information that you need. You're able to contact us there, but you're also able to call us up if interested and able to see all of our contact information there as well.
And the /story, just out of curiosity, does each county have an extension with the county, or is this kind of unique to Story?
Yeah, so Extension is an extension of the university into every single county. So every single county in Iowa is going to have an Extension office. They do vary on different programs that they offer. So my program and position is not in every single county. But yes, because that is why we have the /story, every single county is going to have their own website and different programs that they offer. So if you're in another county, definitely worth checking out.
Well, Stephanie Daniels, I think we're fortunate that you came to, I guess, the mecca of ISU Extension here at Iowa State University, the mothership, if you will, and you're close to the pulse. And we are so fortunate to have you included on these couple times a month. We're going to be growing this outreach and involvement that your programs provide, not only Story County, but all our listening area can benefit from the information that you're sharing. So thank you. Thank you so much. Is there anything else?
There is not. We're always looking for community members to come on into the office or contact us with any questions that they have. Like I said, Extension has tons of other things going on, so definitely check out our website. We also have a Facebook page, and we are very glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Stephanie Daniels with ISU Extension. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. So tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And hit the play button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button. You are the community and community radio.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz. Thanks to our guest Wolf Osterich, Susan Guiazda, Keith Abraham, and Stephanie Daniels. And thank you, Mike Metz. I've been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarba.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were The Beatles with Rain, John Barleycorn, Must Die by Traffic, and Who'll Stop the Rain by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And morning masterpieces at 9 a.m. And remember, you, the listener, are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.